It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. President Trump promised to carry out the largest deportation program in U.S. history, targeting the estimated 13 million unauthorized migrants living in the U.S.
And earlier this week, the U.S. Supreme Court cleared the way for the Trump administration to deport immigrants to countries where they're not citizens, allowing the process of sending people to third countries.
Here in Wisconsin, the Dodge County Detention Facility is the only facility in the state that holds immigrants for U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE. Our guest says there's a lack of records or trusted information about who is being detained there, and that's making it harder for people to find attorneys. Aaron Barbado joins us now, the director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the University of Wisconsin Law School. Aaron, welcome back to Wisconsin Today.
Thanks for having me.
Some of these deportations recently have been higher profile with community outcry, and that was the case for Milwaukee Public Schools teachers' aide Yesenia Ruano and her 10-year-old daughters who left for El Salvador earlier this month, Ruano crossing the border illegally in 2011. What might their lives be like in El Salvador? What are they returning to?
You know, it's a very difficult question to answer. We all have heard a lot about the CECL, the detention facility, the prison facility in El Salvador, and how the government runs in El Salvador. So this family is leaving, going back to a place that they haven't been for a very long time and are facing incredible uncertainty.
The World Bank says in Central America alone, women and girls accounted for nearly half of the 16.2 million migrants in 2020. Do women and girls, do they face bigger risks as the pressure to self-deport is reaching into communities here?
I mean, potentially, I think everyone is feeling the pressure of deportation and not feeling safe in their own communities here in the United States, and have to decide whether they can leave and be safe. But many countries, especially in Central America, what women and children face there is more danger and less protection from law enforcement because of the violence against women and children in those countries.
You've spent time in the Northern Triangle countries of Central America. What are the concerns like? What are the dangers?
I mean, it changes and it depends on which country you're really looking at. But a lot of the individuals that we meet with who are fleeing those countries are facing persecution because of their political opinion, and or because of their particular social group, many of them being women and children who face dangers because of the lack of protections they have as because of their them being women and children. Also, the governments there are many of the governments there, you cannot speak freely against without being persecuted. So many flee when their rights have been violated and they are no longer safe.
Aaron, the U.S. Supreme Court now allowing the Trump administration to resume quickly deporting immigrants to countries other than the countries they're from. What effect might that have on people from Central America who might be returned to a different country?
You know, it's actually quite shocking that this is what people are now facing. It's changed the dynamic of representing people and for people making decisions of whether they are going to seek relief in the United States and try to fight for their rights under the immigration laws to stay here. Because not only are they now facing the fear of returning to a country where they may be persecuted or already have been persecuted, they could be returned to a country that they have never been to and have no connection to and could be disappeared. And that's the word that just keeps coming up and that people are terrified of. So this Supreme Court decision and the policies of the Trump administration to potentially deport people to countries they've never been to and to countries where they may seek other danger without any due process is terrifying.
Can you say more about how this could change, this ruling could change the dynamic of representing people and the situation that you work in at the Immigrant Justice Clinic?
Sure. So practicing immigration law, especially in deportation proceedings, when you're representing someone who is trying to stay here in the United States, because they are fearing persecution in their home country is incredibly difficult as it is. And even it always has been, especially when you're working with people in detention. It's very difficult to communicate with them, to work on, prepare for their testimony because they're in detention, and contacting them is incredibly difficult. But now we're adding another layer, because now we're not only arguing that they can't return to their home country, we have to worry about whether they would be returned to a country, another third country. And how do we know what country would be arguing against that they could potentially be taken to, whether it's South Sudan, which has come up, whether it's El Salvador, where they could be placed in one of the most dangerous detention facilities in the world. So the dynamics have changed. The fear people are facing has increased, and how we represent people in this situation has become more tenuous and difficult, and really difficult to handle.
We're talking with Erin Barbado, director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the UW Law School, as immigrants who are self-deporting to countries and specifically the situation in Central America. Erin, recently we learned about a group of Haitian immigrants who were encouraged to self-deport, and we talked with a French-speaking translator in New London, Elaine Paul, who told us this group of Haitian immigrants she works with had lived middle-class lives in Haiti. Let's take a listen.
I know one was a mechanic, another one was a carpenter, another one was a phlebotomist, one was a grocer, and they abandoned not just their jobs, but their homes, their families, because their lives were threatened.
Will people being deported be able to return to their professions, or will they be starting over? What could the future hold?
I mean, I think that's all questions that these families, these individuals are facing and haven't had to think about in a long time. And, you know, you talk about many of the people we meet have been, when you're in the detention center last week, we met a man who's been in the United States for 30 years and is likely to be deported to his home country that he hasn't been to in 30 years. He doesn't have any family there. His professional license probably no longer is valid. And their lives are completely turned upside down. And trying, especially when people are traveling with children who may be US citizens, life could generally be very much more difficult for them in their home country now that they don't have connection to it and they don't know the culture or have the education or even potentially the language that's necessary to live there.
You work with people detained at the Dodge Detention Facility in Juneau, that facility being the one in Wisconsin that holds immigrants for U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. What have you noticed?
So we work with people who are detained at the Dodge County Detention Facility by Immigration Customs Enforcement. We visit there at least once a month to provide information and consultations to people that are detained and would like legal information. We then look to hopefully find them legal representation, but there's a lack of immigration attorneys in Wisconsin, and with the number of people being detained and deported right now, most people are not going to be represented by attorneys. And what we've recently noticed over the past 2 months is there are an increased number of people that are detained there from Wisconsin, from various parts of Wisconsin, many of whom do not have any sort of criminal record and have lived here peacefully for many years.
What about families? What happens to families?
So if families are separated, so let's say there's a father who has been picked up by ICE and is now in immigrant detention. Families are also mixed statuses. So we'll often speak to a father whose, you know, wife is a U.S. citizen, but he's ineligible to get lawful status for various reasons. But you also may have a family who are all undocumented, and they may never see one another again, is what they're facing now. If someone is undocumented and they are deported and their family remains here and they're undocumented, they can't go visit that country. They can't leave. And so they're facing these unconscionable decisions of whether they remain separated or whether they return to a country where they may be unsafe and their children potentially don't have a future.
Can your immigrant justice clinic take on the number of cases in this moment that could assist these people?
No, we have never been able to do that. The deportation system allows people to have representation from an attorney if they can afford an attorney or if they can find a pro bono attorney. There's only maybe five attorneys in Wisconsin that can do this work pro bono. The need is so much higher than that. Mm. And the government doesn't provide representation to people unless they can, you know, they can afford it or find a pro bono attorney. So it's the stakes are incredibly high. If you have an attorney and you're in detention, you're three times more likely to receive relief to remain in the United States. But most people are going in front of an immigration judge and a trained ICE attorney by themselves and defending their right to remain in the United States while they're fearing their life.
Very quickly, ICE is waiting at some immigration hearings to detain people. Have your clients been reluctant to go to their proceedings? What do you notice there?
The fear has definitely increased. And many of our clients who are in detention already, mm-hmm. that fear doesn't exist for right. them because they're already right. in detention. Mm-hmm. But people who are not in detention, they are incredibly fearful of appearing in immigration court. But if they don't appear in immigration court, they can't seek the relief that they may be eligible for under the law. So people are having to take that risk and showing up in court when they're already terrified. Now that level of terror has increased a great amount.
Erin, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Erin Barbado is director of the Immigrant Justice Clinic at the University of Wisconsin Law School.